The voices of the men were loud and booming, as if the wine they drank affected their hearing. I handed a plate of tart to one of the serving women, who carried it to the table and set it in front of Colonel Hawkins. "So how many rebel prisoners did your men bag, Colonel?" asked Master Lockton. I passed another dish of tart. The colonel shook his head.
"Near 3,000 of the devils. Wish we could have shot them all."
My hand shook as I reached for the third.
"Why so?" Lockton asked.
"We've no place to put them."
The colonel pushed the tart to the side and reached into the bowl of shelled almonds in the middle of the table. He tossed a few into his mouth and crunched loudly.
"I thought you were using the bridewell," Lockton said. "That should provide ample space."
The general snorted and shook his head.
"The prison is so stuffed, the walls are ready to burst. We've had to pack them into the sugar houses and the confiscated churches, too."
He reached for more nuts.
"It's a right nuisance. Never thought we'd have so many."
"I'd say so many prisoners are a badge of honor for your men and the king," Lockton said. The colonel raised an eyebrow.
"We do not need a badge of honor. We need a decent plague to take them off our hands."
The men around the table chuckled.
"The expense of feeding them will be staggering."
"The rebels planted the seeds of war. Let them enjoy their harvest."
Lockton ate a forkful of tart.
"Force the local patriots to feed them."
"I say shoot them," growled the man who looked like Edward the Bull. "'Course then we have to dispose of the bodies. Messy work, that."
"Waste of ammunition," the colonel said.
"And some members of parliament would fuss like wet hens. No, I predict a cold winter will dispatch most of them in a natural way."
Lady Seymour spoke up.
"What if the rebels decide that turnabout is fair play? We need to care for them so they do not harm their British captives."
"With all due respect, ma'am," the man said with a smile, "the rebels would first have to capture a prisoner. Given their blunders, it is an unlikely prospect."
Lady Seymour nodded gravely.
"What of the prisoners they took after the victory at Breed's Hill?"
The table fell very still at that. Talk of what happened at Breed's Hill in Boston was as rude as stating that Madam's false eyebrow was about to fall off. But Lady Seymour was the wealthy elderly widow of a British lord, incapable of social error, so all pretended she had not said a word. Several men cleared their throats and reached for their wine. Madam lifted her goblet.
"I am told there are plans to reopen the John Street Theater," she said loudly. "This heralds a return to civilization and order."
Her eyebrow flopped into the rice pudding. The man seated to her right coughed loudly into his napkin. The wine steward's face turned the color of a plum, and a serving girl bit down on her lip to prevent a laugh. Madam avoided looking at her pudding.
"A toast," she said with a wobbling voice.
"A toast to civilization," Lockton added. "I've heard plans for a cricket club, too."
As the men roared in approval, I carried the tray loaded with the dirty supper dishes down the stairs. On my return trip upstairs, I carried two pots of coffee. My trips up and down the stairs continued until my knees threatened to fold up and quit, bringing dishes down, carrying more delicacies and hot drinks up, down, up, down, up, 100 miles of stairs in one night. As the candles guttered out and were replaced with new, Madam and Lady Seymour retired to their bedchambers, and Lockton's business companions left to play billiards at the King's Head Tavern. The officers requested more coffee, lit their pipes, and unrolled their maps across the tablecloth, stained now with splashes of turtle soup, butter, wine, and candle wax. The serving girls moved down to the kitchen, where kettles of water were put on to boil for the washing of dishes. The cook was long departed, and Sarah dozed on a kitchen chair, her swollen feet propped up on a pillow. I picked up the enormous bowl of table scraps and headed out the back door. Miss Mary Finch always mixed table scraps with muck and spread the smelly mess on her garden come spring. But the Locktons weren't much for growing things. Not when the markets were so close to hand. Scraps here were dumped down the privy. I closed the door behind me and stopped. The cold air took my breath away. The sky was a black curtain, the stars ice chips whittled by an old knife. I wrapped the shawl tighter across my shoulders and pulled it high to protect my neck.
Through the kitchen window, I could see two of the women squabbling about who would wash and who would dry. The second floor windows glowed with candlelight shadowed by the shapes of the officers circling around the map. I shuddered, and my teeth banged together. Water would turn solid tonight. It was a bad night to be without a blanket. Would they truly allow prisoners to freeze to death? The soldier wife stopped arguing, and the men lit fresh candles. The stars whirled above me, and inside, deep inside, something turned. I could not name it nor recognize its form. I drew in a cold breath and blew it skyward. The air came out of me in the shape of a cloud. It drifted above the rooftop and dissolved into the stars. Would they let him starve? The stars said not a word. The back door banged open and I jumped.
"Don't tarry," said Sarah. "You need to dry the last of them glasses afore you lay yourself to sleep."
"Yes, ma'am, as soon as I finish this." I quickly carried the scraps bowl out into the yard, walking past the privy all the way back to the stable wall where straggly holly bushes grew. I glanced quick at the house to make sure no one was watching, then pulled aside the prickly branches of the bush and set the bowl down within it. I covered the bowl with my apron. On my way back to the house, I loaded my arms with firewood. I doubted she'd notice that I left the bowl outside, not with me bringing in extra wood. I took another deep breath of the frozen air before I opened the door, confused that I should be so awake after such a long day. I frowned as my thoughts tumbled and multiplied. I had been invaded. A dim plan had hatched itself in my brain pan without my consent, and I did not much like it.